Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show with Terry Hines. Stay tuned.
It's time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Gary Hines.
Welcome to the Hair Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. He's the host with the most, Mr. Kerry Hines.
Good morning, and welcome to an all-new live edition of the Hair Radio Morning Show. We're the longest-running daily live broadcast on hair in the world, 25 years and counting. Now, on today's broadcast, we've got the latest in hair and beauty talk, great music, and much, much more. I must thank our Carafe Hair Products, Hair Nation Expo events, Salon TV Network, and all of our amazing advertisers who are responsible for getting this episode on the air. Now, if today is your first time tuning in, thank you. And remember to press 1 to make a live comment or shout-out during the show. We're here each weekday from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 5 to 8 Central. Now grab your cup of coffee and enjoy today's show.
Yeah.
As women, it seems like we carry the weight of the world on our shoulders, and that weight is directly balanced between your 2 feet. And with this balancing act, who do you think is suffering? It's not the kids. It's your feet. While running errands, paying bills, or dodging traffic, you could be ruining your feet. Wearing the wrong shoes for the wrong period of time can cause more damage than you think. Hammer toe and bunions are the leading deformities in black women, and Dr. Yolanda Raglan is the first black and only female podiatrist with practices dedicated solely to the correction of these type of deformities. So let this black girl do some magic and fix your feet. For more information, visit fixyourfeet.com, providing medically necessary surgery with a cosmetic result.
Oh my God, I didn't know that, you know, talking about beauty icons would be such a great thing, and people wanted to hear, like, what did I think? And, you know, so what I did was I said I wanted to do a little spin on it. I wanted to recognize the, not just the beautiful women, but the beautiful men of this world as well. And it took me a while to get this list compiled down to 10 amazing men, and from very diverse backgrounds, from different points in life and in years and careers. And, you know, we just wanted to find that quintessential list. And if you don't agree with the list, I have no problem listening to you and you telling me, oh, well, you forgot this one or you forgot that one. But I will say I think I covered it very, very well. I did lots of research on different lists that have been compiled by, like, the likes of Time Magazine and People Magazine and different periodicals that, you know, traveled really, really far back to some of the screen gods of yesteryear, and then some of the pioneers in male beauty of today. So the list is very diverse, and I think that you guys are really going to enjoy it. And I think for some of you, it's going to take you back and make you think, and then you're going to say, oh, my God, yeah, he was a beautiful man. So so I think that we are ready to start. Are you guys ready?
Oh, we are.
Yes.
So excited. All right.
So like I said before, this list, it might be a little interesting, but I'm pretty sure you guys will agree. So the very first list of our male beauty icons has been referred to in so many different lights as one of the greatest actors of all time, and his name is Mr. Marlon Brando. Marlon Brando is an American actor, film director, and activist. He is hailed for bringing gripping realism to his roles, and he is widely considered as one of the greatest American actors of all time. He won 2 Academy Awards. One was for On the Waterfront in 1954, and then, of course, his iconic role in 1972 as The Godfather.
Oh, that's right. Now, he was also the Streetcar Named Desire, right?
But he didn't win an Academy Award for that one,
though. Oh, okay. Wow. And that's his most famous role, I think.
Yeah, and he actually was nominated for 8 Academy Awards. So he's probably nominated for that. He is the most nominated actor of all time. And I'm sure there's a couple of pictures of him, but I need really to get you right to the most attractive male all time. So
I can relate to Marlon.
I looked at photos of him, and I would say that's a title very well earned. The first thing that I kept looking at was this boyish, devilish grin. So I'm pretty sure he was not. I don't think that he was a playboy, but if he was, I think he would have every right to be.
Well, I'll tell you, do you remember, like, all that I can remember, I certainly knew of him during his life and when I was a little boy, but I remember Marlon Brando as Superman's dad. That's how I remember Marlon Brando. Yeah, he played Superman's dad in the original Superman movie, and he was the father. And we also remember him being a close friend to Michael Jackson. So he got a lot of press. Michael got a lot of press. Michael Jackson was very close to the family.
Mm-hmm.
And so we certainly remember a whole lot about Marlon Brando towards the end of his life. And so just amazing. So I can understand why he is a good choice. It may not be all about so much about exterior beauty, and that's always in the eye of the beholder, but he has led, you know, he had an extraordinary motion picture career, and that was just, you know, so impactful and went way beyond the motion pictures. So good choice.
I think it was a good choice.
Yeah, as I was researching some photos of him, I noticed that he did in his younger days have like a very structured, almost model-esque type face. So there was definitely some qualities that would be very eye-catching. And I know of Marlon Brando and knew of his work, but these earlier pictures really grabbed my attention. So I would say that he does deserve to be on this list. And one of the features that I noticed about him is that his eyes are actually downturned in the corners, which people consider like a puppy dog eyes. And I read that that was one of the features that, you know, women found really attractive in him was his eyes. And there was a quote from an actress, so I don't want to say her name, that said that he had the type of eyes that would make you do anything that he wanted. And so I'm going to go have surgery so I can have those type of eyes too.
We think you already have great eyes. You don't need to do that, right?
We'll think about that. But I'm so glad to add Mr. Marlon Brando to this list. And let's jump to the next movie actor to grace this list is the iconic forever teenager, Mr. James Dean. James Dean is an American actor, and he is most known for his role in Rebel Without a Cause. In which he was this rebellious teenager. And now, looking at photos of him, I just saw if he was to be in this day and age, he would completely be a model because his face, he just had that structure that he had very full lips as well and almost pouty lips. And like I said, those features were so distinct and very good hair, too. I noticed that a lot. He had very good hair, and actually, he was what I would consider the Brad Pitt of those days. When I saw these pictures of him, because he did die at a very young age, so he is basically forever immortalized as being young, and he just had this beauty about him that was so striking, and even intimidating, because
sometimes
you have to step back and say, wow. Even if you're secure in who you are, you have to say, well, maybe I need to step my game up the way this brother looks.
Such an extraordinary, even his acting ability and what he, the way he appeared on screen kind of channeled a certain angst in his portrayals and depictions of the characters he played. He was someone who, like you mentioned, he died way before his time, and I think he co-starred with Elizabeth Taylor, and I've seen a movie or two of his. There were so many rumors and so many different things. I think that when he passed away, when he died, I think that all of that just takes on a whole new level of interest in folks. And out in Hollywood, they have nothing but these wonderful, iconic folks that you are talking about, like James Dean, because there's such a mysterious mystery that an aura of mystery, I should say, that surrounds these folks in death as they have lived. So just great choice. wow, you really go back. Old Hollywood.
Yes, he had great lips also, just like Brando. I like the lips. Yes.
Okay, Pearl Walker. Let's make it clear that came from Pearl Walker. All right, Demetrius, good choice.
So I'm going to jump to what some people have considered, and many have considered, the first black sex symbol of all time, and he is the legendary Mr. Harry Belafonte. Now, Harry Belafonte is a singer, well, was a singer, songwriter, actor, and social activist. If you look at photos of Mr. Belafonte in his youth, you would see such a striking man, hazel green eyes, beautiful skin, amazing teeth, just classic, and so many Hollywood producers were almost afraid to use him in films because they felt like if he was the co-star that he would actually outshine the actual star because he was just that good looking. And even in his later days, still kept that air of
swagger. Well, he's still around with us for sure.
Yes, absolutely. And just the swagger and class. We don't see him much now, but, just this swagger and this class about him that is just so attracting, and it just draws your eyes to him, and you just wind up staring.
Exactly.
I mean, if you look at these, if you do some Google search on photos of him from his earlier days, you would just gorgeous black man. Gorgeous.
Well, Harry Belafonte, as you pointed out, was and has been just on our scene of the entertainment landscape for many, 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 many years. And like you said, being one of the first male sex symbols for our community, and beyond that, being such a voice for, political, concerns, he's had a long-lasting and indelible mark on our community and the world for that much. But I also know Harry Belafonte, a great family man. We even remember, Pearl Walker, you may remember, one of his daughters was even acting. I wonder what happened as well. I want to say Heather, but I'm not sure. So Sherry Belafonte Harper, I think it was. And so he really just put those genes out there, believe me. So good stuff. Just a beautiful person inside and out, obviously. Good choice. Wow, you're going back to Demetrius Smart.
Well, these first five men that I selected, I consider them classic, and then the last five will be what I consider more new school. And so number four, I don't think would be a surprise to anyone. He is referred to as the king of rock and roll. It is Mr. Elvis Aaron Presley. Elvis Presley he is one of the most significant cultural icons of the 20th century. Like I said, he is often referred to as the king of rock and roll or simply the king. And I would say in his younger days, I can't claim to be an Elvis Presley fan, but I would have to say those moves in some of his younger movies, Mr. Presley would definitely make you a fan. He had these beautiful piercing brown eyes, this lip snarling curl that he used in lots of his photos where his top lip kind of did this interesting thing, but it drew your attention in.
Oh, yes. The quiver,
exactly.
The famous lip quiver.
Mm-hmm. And he took so many photos like that, but he just had this, I want to say dreamboat kind of thing about him, and I understood why he had so many women names attached to his, because he definitely was a playboy in his heydays, and he was an icon that we did lose too soon, because we lost him before he even turned 50 years old. So
that's right.
You know,
well, Elvis had lived an extraordinary life. He was one of the biggest names in rock and roll music in the world. And a lot of what Elvis said, yes, there were a lot of controversial ways that folks in our community looked at Elvis for different things. But I have to say, because it's believed in part that a lot of the music that he did was kind of pulled from, you know, inspired by people of color. And so that was one argument. We heard all kind of rumors swarming around about Elvis, you know, supposedly thinking that folks could just buy shoes and buy tickets. And we've heard so many different things. We don't really know what to believe. But the one thing I can honestly say is that I actually agree with your choice. I think that what Elvis did for entertainment was wonderful, and he broke a whole bunch of barriers, and he inspired an entire movement and generation. And the only person I think to exceed Elvis Presley, and we'll talk about that in another segment, but I think there's only been one person to exceed him when it comes to generating money and death in terms of entertainers. So good choice. You know, Elvis also, you know, was a serviceman, so we also want to acknowledge that. And very interesting. Wow, you really have gone back. Each choice
and also,
is amazing.
You know, he's buried at Graceland, which was the mansion where he lived, and it's on Elvis Presley Boulevard, which is also Highway 51.
Now, isn't
and
that
it's
in
about
your town,
a mile and a half.
Walker?
Yeah. Right here, it's a mile and a half up the street from my salon. And actually, I have a neighbor who relocated here from Wisconsin, and she's a big Elvis fan. You all would just be amazed at the following that he still has in 2015. She has a life-size mannequin in a case in her living room with an Elvis costume on it. Jewelry, the gold chains that she got from Elvis's jeweler, and it's just an amazing following that he still has. I don't know if you all know it or not, but Graceland is the second most visited home in the United States after the White House. It's just an amazing
That's
left on society and
now,
the world.
Graceland
and
is right there where you are. Is that correct, Pearl?
Right up the street from my salon, yes.
Do you see the buses riding past your shop?
Yes, and the tourists, and this is every day. And then
Pearl, we're going to have you to
go
fess
ahead.
Up. How many times have you been to Graceland?
I've never been to Graceland.
Pearl. Don't
we
even
talk
try
about
it.
I'm going to go.
Because we think you've been there a few times, Pearl. We think you've been there a few times.
But there's an area around the mansion, and I've visited those other, you know, some of the other tourist spots around the mansion. But I've never been in Graceland. And about Elvis's hair, I have to share this. Elvis was a natural blonde to me, Theus, but he dyed his hair black.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I've never even heard of anybody doing that.
I never knew that.
He was a natural blonde. He was in the movie Love Me Tender. He was blonde in that movie. Mm-hmm.
Oh. Then that was his own hair?
That was his own hair. Mm-hmm.
We'll have to check that out. Wow. And that's a great song. Who can forget Love Me Tender? Well, listen, folks, if you have just joined us, you, of course, are listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines, and with me on the line today, my wonderful co-host, Ms. Pearl Walker, of course, and our Wednesday contributor to the Hair Radio Morning Show. He is the makeup czar, as far as I'm concerned. His name is Demetrius Smart, and you guys know him. He's with us each week, and you've got your own fan base, Demetrius. You really do, and they chime in every week to listen to you right here, so I want to pass that along to you. And just it's such great, wonderful honor to have you with us again this morning
Thank
on the
you.
Show. Yes. Now, today you're counting down the male icons. And so I'll let you continue. This sounds wonderful.
Okay, so the last icon of the classic era, this one was a bit of a stretch, but I feel comfortable with this one, and he is considered as the first ever Latin heartthrob, and his stage name was known as Ricky Ricardo, but professionally he is known as Mr. Desi Arnaz. Desi Arnaz was the husband of the late Lucille Ball, and he was a popular singer, dancer, club performer, and if you were to look at videos of him, because actually when he originally started doing the I Love Lucy, he was already in his 40s. So if you were to see videos and photos of him while he was in his 20s, you would see a man that easily rivaled any silver screen god at the time. He was another actor with really good hair, an amazing smile, that Cuban flavor that had that spice to it. So he had the look of a classic movie actor. However, he had that Cuban flavor that just set him apart from anybody else during his time. And him and his wife, the comedic legend, Lucille Ball, actually caused a little bit of controversy because at that time a lot of people considered their marriage a mixed marriage because her being a Caucasian woman and him being of Cuban descent. And, you know, to see the two of them on screen together, I don't think you could honestly appreciate one without the other. They truly played off of each other in a magnificent way. Their show, I Love Lucy, plays every day somewhere in the world since both of them have passed away. So it just goes to show that this man's influence has still gone on way after his time. I've heard in an interview that Ricky Martin and even Enrique Iglesias referenced Desi Arnaz as an inspiration to them.
Well, you know what? I think that is an amazing choice, and particularly for me. I love that. I think that Desi Arnaz, I would have never expected him to make your list, but I can still see why. Desi Arnaz was someone who made such an impact in the entertainment world. Going back to what you said, it is reported that the networks did not want Lucille Ball to have Desi as her husband because of that so-called mixed marriage. And it's always been alleged that he was, so they wanted to cast someone else, someone who was not of Cuban descent as her husband. But Lucille stood her ground, and not only that, Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz formed Desi Lu Productions, which went on to produce so many other shows like Gomer Pyle and so many other TV shows that we know today. But the biggest contribution to all of entertainment and to television specifically is that Desi Arnaz, and this is something I don't have to go on the internet, I remember this and know this in my head, Desi Arnaz created something called, they created the sitcom, if you will. They created it in this way. Until they did what they did, they only knew of using one camera. So Desi Arnaz created this thing where they used three cameras. So to this day, we use three cameras to record a TV program. Three cameras. That format, that's what was created by Desi Arnaz. And so, yes, Lucille Ball went on. They stayed together for quite a while. Lucille went on and she married someone else, and Desi, you know, they lived a good little while, and they were big folks from Beverly Hills. They lived in Beverly Hills, I seem to recall. And I happened to be in Los Angeles back in the 90s when Lucille Ball passed away. I was at the Arsenio Hall show, and they flashed on the monitor that Lucille had passed away that day, you know, at that moment when we were in the audience. I was sitting in a dog pound in the old days. We were on his show. And they showed it on a monitor that she had passed away. So I went back to Hollywood Boulevard after Arsenio's show wrapped at Paramount Studios at that time. And on Hollywood Boulevard was Lucille Ball's star. And her star was located in front of Frederick Gastulis, in front of Frederick's of Hollywood. And so, and I remember, and on her star, they placed the beak wreath sand and all of that. With and fans started to leave things, and I saw that there when I came back to Hollywood Boulevard. So I will never forget that. And we love Lucy, to put it mildly, and we love Desi Arnaz, and he is an amazing choice. His son, Desi Arnaz Jr., is still going strong, and so is their daughter out there. So they're doing some great things. The great Lucille, I think, Lucy Arnaz. So great choice, you know, and such personal memories for all of us. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, guys, so we're going to jump into, so that those top five men, Marlon Brando, James Dean.
Great classic choices. Wow.
Harry
Belafonte,
Elvis Presley, and Desi Arnaz are what we consider our classic male beauty icons. But now we're going to bring
it
to the new.
Why? I'll tell you what. Why don't we do that? It's a perfect time for us to take our music break, give you a chance to grab your coffee, and when you come back on the other side of this music break, I think it'll be perfect time to go into your, I guess, your contemporary side of the list.
Absolutely.
How's that?
Great.
All right, folks. Well, listen, we are going to take just a quick music break. Won't take very long at all. And when we come back, we're going to kind of we're going to have some more of this wonderful list of your iconic folks. And then don't forget, we have got to we've also got to get the update on what happened at your show, the Living Doll Show. So stay with us, folks. There's a whole lot more of the Hair Radio Morning Show, featuring, starring Tamethia Smart, coming up after this music break. Stay with us.
Just 'cause he says he
To the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Terry Hines. Now, my very special guest today is Linda C. You guys know her. She helps to co-host this amazing new segment on our broadcast called Hairpreneur, which is all about, well, from the ground up, on starting your business. Again, it's my honor to welcome back the amazing Linda C. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning, hairpreneurs. Good morning, Carrie. How are you?
Doing just great. Now, I am excited because this is our third outing in terms of our episodes. Yes, yeah, so it's like a show within a show right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. So first, let's start at the beginning, Linda C. Remind everybody what Hairpreneur is all about and where are you?
Right now I'm out of West Orange, New Jersey, and Hairpreneur is all about helping others, you know, get their business from the ground up, like Carrie mentioned, about helping men and women out here who wants to come and, you know, do their hair business, whether it's a brick and mortar store, whether it's online business. And so we're here to give advice and to kind of share stories on how to help our hairpreneur listeners. And even if you're not in the hair industry, you can apply all these tips that Carrie and at times I may give you to share with my stories that can help you build your business. So that's why I'm here. And I've actually on the brinks of starting my luxury hair extension with right now, and it's building, and Carrie's been helping me and giving pointers. So that's how we started. And, you know, he's the brainchild of Hairpreneur, and we're talking and said, you know what? We should start a segment where we can give advice because he's the one and only hair radio show that is like this. And there are radio shows out there, but not like this one. So not at all. So I'm very grateful to be here and to be invited to be part of this this wonderful journey, and hopefully to be a regular with you guys to kind of chat, and you guys can call in at times to talk about, you know, your adventures and starting the business, and even the businesses that are striving. What are you doing? What can you assist with the ones that are struggling and trying to get their business up and running?
Absolutely, and we definitely will get into the subject of the day, as you mentioned. But I mean, I love the conversation we were just having before we got on the air today, and talking about these businesses that have persevered and made it through the pandemic. But it was a very big struggle, and folks were having a difficult time. So, you know, you guys out there, you need this. This is what you need. This will fortify your spirit and keep you moving, right, in the right direction. Yeah. So real, real happy. And again, welcome to the third installment, our third episode of Hairpreneur from the Ground Up. I'm Carrie Hines with Linda C. from Northern New Jersey. So yes, we got to work in the Northern New Jersey.
Oh, I keep forgetting. Now,
yeah, that's okay. We want the folks of the we very much are, and it's probably a good time to do a roll call. We want to shout out to all of our amazing listeners. We've got great folks out there. We talk to just about every week. Even on Wednesdays, you guys know we have Smooth Black on, who joins us at about 8:30 to talk about his hair, wonderful Smooth Black Ink, which is his hair business, and we have so many others out there. And on Fridays, we've got a couple of folks who come on Fridays at 8, and they do a whole live thing with spirituality and some other things tossed in with entrepreneurial things as well. But right now, it's time for Linda Fade. So, Linda C., starting off, when you are, and this is a good point to find out where you know, what went into your thinking as well on, you know, what type of business, or did it ever cross your mind, like you guys out there, when you are about to start a business, and for me, one of the first things that kind of went through my mind was, what type of business do I want to be? What type of business do I want to reflect to the general public out there? So that was my question to you. Do you have, do you remember having that kind of thinking about that decision, or are you still thinking about it? Or because even if you think about it, you know, or thought about it or decided, you can always change your mind. So that's the beauty of all this. But did that ever kind of weigh on you at all?
I mean, I've always wanted to, I love hair. So I've always, like I said, on the first segment we had, I talked about I started wearing hair since I was 13, which is absolutely true. And I grew to love it. It's part of my life. And why I spend so much money buying the hair and doing all this stuff. Why not go into the industry? I have a love for it. You know, and I've always been, even when I go out, I see a woman with beautiful hair, or I even saw a couple guys that had beautiful extensions, and I went up to him. I said, oh, my gosh, this is gorgeous. And he told me he makes his own wigs. And so, I mean, and he always had a passion for it. So, I mean, it's a passion. And I think people, 90% of people, and it's not so much, you could think about the lawyers, the doctors, you know, people who have their own stores. They have a love for it. You know, you just don't go into business without just saying, well, okay, I'm just going to, you know, open like a store. But what kind of store? Why are you opening the store? What's your story? So everyone, I believe, in part, has a story to why they're doing things. Like I have a friend who's in fitness, and when we were kids, he grew up, he was heavy. But when he started eating healthy and exercising, and he saw he developed a love for it, I mean, he went into having his own business, you know, as a personal trainer, owning a gym.
Wow.
And he's very profitable. But he loves, when you talk to him, you can see the passion that he loves his job. He wakes up every morning at 4 o'clock in the morning to go to work. And you would think, you know, people would say, oh, my gosh, waking up so early and this and that. But he says, I love it. It's what I do. I love changing people's lives. So we could say the same thing for the people who go into the medical field, the doctors, the lawyers, and you know, they do this.
And the same thing for Carrie Hines.
I wake
at 4
Carrie
o'clock
Hines,
as well.
Yes. And you
so
have
the Hair Radio Morning
life.
Show on. That's a,
exactly.
Oh,
so when you
kind.
Have that passion, you are driven to do whatever it takes, because not only are you changing somebody's life, you're your own boss. And being your own boss is the hardest, because you don't know when to stop, you know. And I think a lot of times that because we have such a love for it, and yes, it can be, you know, it is stressful. I can't say it can be stressful. It is stressful. But at the end of the day, we plant those seeds and we see our flowers flourish, you know. And whether using, and we were talking about earlier about different outlets of how people are using the pandemic to flourish their business. And I don't want to take that with me. I'll let you do your thing. But I think this is it. I mean, people go into businesses and because they love what they're doing, it's a passion, you know?
Exactly. And that's really, and I love that. And even for myself, when you'll find this in the How to Get Rich in the Hair Business book, but when I sat down to figure out what type of business I wanted Hair Radio to be, and this is on every level. That's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about how to figure out what kind of business you want to create and set up for yourself, and also what type of entity you want it to be, because that's a very important aspect of business.
Course.
Now, when I, and I think this will be helpful, when I sat down, because folks always ask me, like, I'll hear this from time to time, are you tired? Are you, you know, you got so much to do, you do so much, how do you do all these things? it's almost like a complaint.
Yeah.
because folks can't really understand somebody else's passion per se. But the thing is, I always remind folks, when I sat down to create Hair Radio, and I initially, like I said, I created Hair Radio in 95. But when I came back 8 years ago and I put all this on Facebook, I just reminded everybody it's my 8-year anniversary this past May, since I left my job, so to speak. I was still working and doing everything. Oh, yeah, I shared it with, we have amazing fans everywhere who went on Facebook and they put such kind words. Thank you. This past May, it made 8 years since I punched someone else's time clock. And, and what I remembered doing was sitting down when I was still at the job, which I still live one block over from my last job. Literally, I still see the folks here. And I'm glad of that because it's a reminder of how far I've come. But back to that, I sat down and I figured out, well, what do I want to do with this business? What do I want to create? What do I want to be the takeaway for a customer? What do I want the customer to look like? Who do I want the customer to be? So all that went in, even the legalities. What type of business? Do I want to be brick and mortar? Do I just want to be online? Do I want to be registered this? Do I want to work from home? Do I want to open up office space? Blah, 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 blah. All these are wonderful things that I had to write down and think about. And the very first thing that I remember coming to a decision about is what the business should reflect who I am and what interests me.
Mm-hmm.
That was the very first thing. I didn't sit and think, well, what do I need to do to just make money? And what's really bizarre is that I didn't leave my job to start working for myself. I know that sounds strange, but it is very much the truth. I left the job because I was overworked from working for someone else. I was really tired. They paid me well, but I was really tired. You know, I had files as high as your head. Now, right now, my files are higher than my head.
Yeah.
But it's a very different story when the files are yours versus the files
of
somebody else's job.
Because you can manage those files.
Exactly. So it's a very big difference. And I sat down and I decided, I said, you know what? I want the business to reflect what I am and what I'd like to do. And so I said, oh, we're great with public relations and marketing. I said, let's make sure that I do public relations and marketing.
Yeah.
I said, I love to write. Let's incorporate my writing.
Mm-hmm.
I love to broadcast. Let's incorporate broadcasting. I love the hair and beauty people. Let's make sure that they are front and center with everything that I do. And as if that's not enough, I get to go out and do live shows and other things, but I wanted my business to reflect everything that I love to do and enjoy doing. So love to do and enjoy doing. So that was very important. And that's what I did. That was the first thing. The next thing, which would make sense for folks, it's not enough to just jot down what you'd like to do and even to think about it. You also have to then figure out ways to monetize it. So I had to come up with different ways that of those things that I love to do, what do you have to do to monetize those things so that you could create a living for yourself? And that was important because I didn't want to have you might as well have a job if you are compelled to do things that you don't want to do in order to make a living. And I never thought that I was put here to just be a worker for somebody else's business, because I thought of myself, well, gee, you know, you're going to work until you're like 65, 70 years old,
mm-hmm.
and it's very sad because, you know, what are you going to be able to do at that age? You
exactly.
know, and there are a lot. Yeah. Listen, I better shout out to the folks who are doing great things. That's not old. But wouldn't it have been nicer if you could have enjoyed yourself a little bit more along the way instead of giving your best years to an employer? That's all I'm saying, Linda. See, what do you say about that?
I mean, I think also it's I'm going to make two comments. I think also that, you know, in other countries, people retire at such an early age versus the United States. We wait to 65. And it's like by the time you retire, you really don't know who you are at some point because you spent your whole life working, right? And so even if you wanted to do something, it's like, okay, what do I do with myself now? I know a lot of my clients, they've gone back to work because they don't know what to do with themselves. You know, and some of them have actually passed away after working so hard, and they don't even get a chance to enjoy their all their savings, all their hard work, all their pension that they've been putting away to enjoy. So
and
I don't know if it was
Can't we figure that out? Yes.
And we can figure that out now. I think it's just the lack of education that we have where I feel like there's not enough material out there, outreach programs to help these young entrepreneurs or even the entrepreneurs that start later in life. And then there's fear also, and then there's lack of funding, you know. And, yes, it's great that you start your business, but you have to think about – the people who started their business many years ago or many decades ago had, and this is my opinion, had had a little bit more help than the people that are starting, that started 10 years ago and versus the people that are starting after the pandemic. I feel like it's people that have been laid off or people that have been, I mean, we've all been through COVID, which was a terrible, terrible thing, and we're still going through it. But I feel like, yes, the people that businesses are struggling, I feel like they made it so hard for them to get the funding. And then when they got it, you have to jump through hoops to you know, show the proof. And then there's people out there, not to be negative, that don't have the true business, and then they get funding. So the people are trying to be honest, and I'm not turning this in a negative way, but because I'm in the financial industry, it affects you also as an entrepreneur, Carrie, myself, who is striving to become somewhat leveled entrepreneur. And when I say leveled, meaning that I've established my business and now I've opened my online or my brick and mortar, and now I'm producing products and I'm changing lives and then reaping the benefits. But it's not as easy because the funding out there for people that are starting out after the pandemic is zero. And even if you try to get it, they tell you, oh, you would have had to register your business by this time. But who's thinking about that during a pandemic? There's so many businesses that became, that developed after the pandemic because people lost their jobs and they saw an opportunity to come out and take that leap of faith, you know? But they've taken that leap of faith, but now who's helping them? Okay, where's their help? You know, you've helped the businesses that are struggling. And I feel so bad because there's so many people who's been in business for 30, 40 years. I've spoken to so many of my clients that I've actually gone to their businesses and visited. And they're in tears because they have to shut down because the money that they're giving them cannot even sustain the business. right? Because the lease is so expensive, or they can't pay their employees. But then you have those businesses also, so it's a double-edged sword. You have those businesses that people have been laid off, but now they've had the opportunity. You just talked about it. They've realized that I don't want to be 65 and then now trying to figure out what I want to do with my life. I want to take that leap and always show if I wanted to do like some type of embroidery store or whatever store, a business that I love and I want to produce it. And they've gone out their 401k, or they borrowed money from friends, or they refi their house, or whatever they have to do to make it. But now that they have it, who's helping them?
Really, tell me more.
You know, so that's what it is. It's like, it's frustrating because at times it can be, yes, you're providing a wonderful service, because every time I talk to you, if I have an issue, I always turn around and look at your successes. And I'm not saying
Thank
it because
you.
I know you. I'm saying it because you
Thank
talked
you.
About your struggles. You talked about how you walked away from a great job, but because your mental
yeah.
health, and this is not your love, this is not what you want to do, had pushed you
right.
along to start something. And obviously, yes, it was risky. Yes, you were scared. And there's a lot of people that need to hear that to say that it's okay, you know, and at the same
That's true, Linda C. When I left, I'll tell you, though, the thinking that I have, the only difference that I believe of what I possess that I think others should really take a closer look at is that I look at the real big picture.
Yes.
Not just the short term, but the long
mm-hmm.
term.
Exactly.
And I realized that the long term was more important to me. See, most other folks look at just the short term. Oh, I have to pay the rent in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I gotta get this. I got to do that. So I got to make sure I have this money, and I got to go to work in order to get the money, and I got to do this and do that. So I'm stuck. So, but the way I looked at life, I said, you know, I don't look at it as a destination so much.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't. I think more so, what do I need to do to be happy each day? That was number one.
Yes.
And so that goes back to that figuring out what kind of business I wanted to be. What did I want to do, and how was I going to do it, and all that each day. That was my thing. If I could get through the day, setting myself up for success for that day, and I'll tell you, just on a very basic level, very intrinsic level, we're talking about food and
mm-hmm.
some roof over my head, literally.
<Of course. laughs>
If I could get through those things, then it was a successful day.
Yes.
And that became my bar.
Yeah.
Not my drinking bar, okay? I didn't go to a bar or a drink. I would never have amounted to anything. But that became the bar that I set, which is a very low bar, because those are things on the hierarchy of needs. You have to eat. You have to, you know, make sure those things are in place and have proper shelter. So once I had those things covered, I said, well, you know, the rest is kind of gravy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way I looked at it. And I, as I write in How to Get Rich in the Hair Business, my book that's out there on Amazon and everywhere else, I had to realize, I said, okay, well, you know, I had to make some adjustments, which I talk about.
Yes.
Because if you are going to embark upon an entrepreneurial career, something that you spoke of very highly, and we're going to do a whole episode about funding and raising monies for your mm-hmm. business goals. So we'll talk about that in upcoming episodes of Hairpreneur with Linda C.
Mm-hmm.
and Kara Hines. So that's going to come up very soon. But in looking at all of that, like you mentioned as well with the 401k, which was one of the things that I used to leap forward. But for you guys out there, you know, this is very, very important. All of these little tips will be able to help you on your way. So I just want to say, Linda C., but for me, it was deciding how I was going to you know, finance the business, but also that I had to do this and I had to pick out some things that I wanted to do. And like I said, for me, I think I think like I set the bar again so low that my thinking was a little different than others who just
yeah.
think, oh, I'm going to, you know, we'll make so much money and I can do this and do
yeah.
that. They become very money focused. And I think that
yes.
I don't know if that's the right way to go about it. Perhaps it works for some. It just wasn't the route that I wanted to take.
Mm-hmm.
My deciding mm-hmm. was that I wanted to be happy each day.
Yes.
And it's about the quality of life,
mm-hmm.
right?
Of
yeah,
course.
The quality
yes,
of your life.
Absolutely. And that's where I, like I was saying to my husband, and he says, you know, I have to say, like, I'm a people person, and I love to talk to people face to face. I love to hear their experiences, and I love to, you know, being in the financial industry is not about making money or getting these loans. It's about changing somebody's life. Like I would always say to my boss, like, I'm not going to sell a 91-year-old person a loan or a credit card or whatever it is or some type of product just because to make that sale. What value am I getting out of it? And what value is that person going to get out of it? You know? So that's where I said to myself, well, I want to do something. And I know some people may say that, oh, well, hair extension doesn't do that. But I look at the bigger picture. I just don't want to sell hair extensions. I want to grow it to where it's something out of the park. You know, is that the right thing?
Well,
so,
you said you want to grow it to what?
To like something huge, to grow it like a different market. And I said, well,
oh, yes.
I just don't want to just base it online. I want to go into a store and see face-to-face the people, talk to these men and women and how I'm changing their life and provide them with a whole other service. That is what drives me every day. I look at the end that, okay, well, not only am I going to set example, I'm going to leave a legacy. You know, and I'm going to have, like you said, that it's about having mental health and being healthy mentally and the quality of life, you know. So, and that's what drives me every day, because every day I don't wake up bubbly or happy in that sense, because you know, sometimes you wake up on the wrong side of the bed, but you gotta make it right
yeah.
before you step out the door, you know. So,
this
you know,
true.
I put my
and if you start working
on,
for yourself
yeah,
often,
exactly.
you don't even have to step outside your door.
Exactly. and you know,
yeah.
I have my book. I have my that I work on my website with my, you know, with the people. I would say my Potifies that, you know, and
yes.
I'm coining your phrase.
That's right.
and
oh,
that,
I remember.
And
to remind everybody what the Potify is all about.
Well, it's a group of friends or family members that support you, basically, that absolutely
right.
give you advice and ideas. And I actually had a break through this weekend, actually yesterday, and I thought about you, and I said, look at me with my Potify, and then, you know, I
wow.
sat down with my cousin, and we went over the website, and she says, you know, we need to change some things. I said, what do you think? And that was construct criticism. I took that to heart, because I know she's helping me. She's helping me grow.
Absolutely.
And she sees my vision, and she goes, this is going to be big, girl. And you have no idea what I see, you know. And so that
wow.
made me happy, you know, that somebody's
absolutely.
Looking out for me. So that's why a lot of people need those, you know, Potifies and
every
and
entrepreneur.
Yes,
every
brother.
Entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Every entrepreneur. And really
yeah.
everybody in life. But that's another
yeah,
story.
Of course.
But
you
yes,
can use that to your life. Yeah.
Exactly.
And that's what it is. And
that's right.
And
in
that's
order to
great.
Be successful, yes, you have to have some sort of support system. And we talked about in the last episode of Hairpreneur, and you guys can find it on Spotify. So it's important to remember that, you know, creating that support system, very, very important. And they also can help with financial support too, so don't forget that part.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that and hopefully in the next episode or so. But, yeah, I am very excited. And we also wanted to talk about entities and all that wonderful good stuff. So in deciding what type of that, you know, what kind of business you wanted it to be and what type of customer you would like to have, again, same types of ideas that went into my creation of that. And I decided, for me, I said, okay, this business is inspired by women of color. It was inspired by my amazing mom and my wonderful and beautiful sisters and just so many women that I've gotten to know along the way, particularly in the hair and beauty industry. And I said, this is what we're going to do with that information. We're going to be a program that would provide the information on healthy hair care for folks who are in front of, I'm going to say, who are seated in the chair, but also for folks who are behind the chair. So for all women particularly, but we also have expanded our wares for men as well, and just for having a cultural, being a cultural touchstone, and that's what I wanted the business to be, and I think we've accomplished that. So it takes time sometimes. You do have to take some time to figure out those things about your business,
mm-hmm.
but it's worth it. It's worth it to
and
have the honest discussions with
too.
Yourself.
Of course, that makes a big, that can make or break your
Absolutely.
Business. You know,
Absolutely.
And I see it has to stand out. Like I see, like I live in northern New Jersey, and there's a lot of stores that are the same right next to each other, but every store stood out a different way. Like I would get a certain, like when I used to buy my hair, I would only go to that one guy, to like that one guy that was selling the hair that I always love, not because he had the best-looking store, but because he provided that service. You know, he had quality hair. He was
on customer service. Oh,
yes,
he had good product.
You know, and yes, and he had the women in there that were like me, that looked like me, and that gave me great advice of what hair I should choose. Oh, okay, I would say this is the style that I'm looking for. So, and versus where I would walk into the bigger stores that were more flashy, and it was just there.
They were colder, and yeah.
Yes, it was just there.
Wow.
I mean, the stuff was really nice, and his store was much smaller, but you would think that he would be struggling with customers. He had loyal customers. I've been going to that man since the 90s, and he
revamped
his store.
I love it. I love it. It's boutique. I call it boutique
yes.
services.
A boutique.
Boutique
yes.
businesses.
Exactly.
Right? Yes.
Exactly. And I've been going to him since the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he moved his store to another town, which was not too far from my house. But I actually found him. I went out. I asked people around, the people that I know that was going to the same boutique that I was going to back in East Orange. I found him. And he said, oh, yeah, he moved to Orange. And I said, what? So
we're talking about
there,
Jersey, folks. That's
Jersey.
New Jersey.
Yeah, Jersey. I keep forgetting. Yes. And so that's how, and then you would think, like, loyal customers, this is what it is they bring in, and I would always tell people, go to his store because he's the best, you know. And there's tons of hair stores on that main street. I mean, we're talking about 20 stores, and that one person stood out. I would like frequent the other stores and kind of looked around, but I never, not that I bought little things here and there, but I always have gone to him for everything.
That is
so
amazing.
I mean, you know, and that's how,
must,
you know,
he
when
must
you
really, yeah. You go ahead. I'm sorry. That's how you know.
No, go ahead, Carrie. No, go ahead. I was done with my story.
Well, no, I just think that's amazing. And, you know, and I appreciate hearing that, taking the time and supporting these small businesses, and it can make all the difference. And because of the help that you gave him and going and patronizing his store for so long might have been the difference that kept him in business. Like we talked about the folks who couldn't make it or made it through the pandemic and stuff, that little bit
mm-hmm.
of support is what can keep the lights on at his brick-and-mortar business.
Definitely.
And I do want to get this across, and I know it's a little off-subject for our broadcast today, but it's important to remember to support the small businesses because You know, little tiny things really do make the difference. Folks think it takes a lot of money. It does, but it also, every little bit of business helps. Support these businesses because our businesses reflect our community. Maybe the other folks, maybe not so much. But for us, it would make the difference in our communities. It really would. If we supported our own businesses and businesses that we create in our community for our community folks, we would, I think we'd be okay.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
That's something that, we have to take the steps to make sure that that's done. Now, your extensions business, so what kinds of hair, do you offer in this extensions business, Linda C. from New Jersey?
Well, I offer virgin hair. It's 100% human hair, and it's from one donor. I have Peruvian hair, and they all come in different styles, like straight hair, wavy, deep wave, like body, and then closures and frontals. So that's pretty much in the gist of it all. And as the business grows, I'll be introducing new things, new products to the business. And so far, that's
yes.
pretty much it.
Well, it sounds like you're off to a great start. It really does. So we are just blown away. And we're going to be mm-hmm. following each step that you take on this wonderful journey that we are talking about on Hairpreneur. Now, I have to say, and getting back to a few of the items that we were talking about today, in choosing the entity, and I remember starting off many times as just a sole proprietorship, an SP we call it, where, you know, you basically, of course, you register your business, but you pretty much stay in that lane. It's not mm-hmm. one that you have looked to become a big corporation or anything outside of just, you know, having a business, which could be online or just, you know, even in way of consulting. It just depends on how you have it set up. But a mm-hmm. lot of folks start off that way because of taxes and stuff like that. And I wanted to just explain that to a lot of folks out there. The reason that they have entities, and when we're talking about entities, we're talking about whether you are that you incorporate or decide to be a regular corporation or a sole proprietorship, limited liability corporation or company. All of that is really designated because of taxation. So that's the reason that you have these different entities so that it can kind of aid with that. And I know that sounds foreign because I was like, when I first started looking into this many years ago, I said, oh, okay, so that's why folks have decided to become an LLC, so to speak, which wasn't always around. LLCs are not new, but it hasn't been all that long that they've been out there. And an LLC is essentially shields your assets from the potentiality of you know, it's not that it stops you from being sued, but it's not able to penetrate to your personal assets. So your business kind of becomes its own entity, if you will, its own being almost. So very interesting stuff. So the sole proprietorship is very much the opposite. And as you can set up for your business, and there are benefits in starting an SP versus setting up an LLC to start. An LLC requires a lot of record keeping, and it has to be approved by the state, and so forth and so on. Where an SP sole proprietorship, basically, like I said, you just go down and registered and you're on your way in terms of business license, pretty much, and that's it. So it's really interesting. But the thing with an SP, with a sole proprietorship, your personal assets, your personal wealth, can, there is no shield that exists with the LLC. So just bear that in mind. That's why a lot of folks, you can start off as a sole proprietorship because it's easy to get started. So yes, much easier to get started, but then you're less vulnerable to a certain degree. So just something to think about. And then you have all kinds of regular corporations, and you have the ideas of stocks that you can disseminate and divide and raise funds for your business. And your business can, I mean, it goes on and on and on. There's so many different opportunities. And maybe one day, Linda C., we'll talk about franchising and all of that and getting your business out into different ways and so forth. So I'm excited about Hairpreneur. I think it is just marvelous, and I think it's going to help, as it has even reflected already with so many folks right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show who are just big fans. So I wanted to take a moment and, you know, talk a little bit more. You know, we spoke about what goes in to your business, but we didn't really get into the brick and mortar versus the online idea.
Okay.
So what do you have to say about that? What comes to mind, Linda C., from New Jersey?
I mean, well, so to me, the online stores, you put more work into it versus when I mean work, you have to find a good website to develop your business website, because that is your bread and butter. That's what you're selling. That's your representation of you and your business. So it needs to be on point and, you know, it needs to appeal to your potential buyers. And you work, I feel like, in my opinion, when you have an online store, you kind of have to work a little bit more, but you do have some free time to dedicate more to your business. Where is it to network with other places, other people, and versus the brick and mortar, it's more face-to-face. So you may work at a brick and mortar, your own business, from like 9 to 6 or 9 to 7, but you have to be dedicated to be there at all times and to stay on point. And, of course, with your brick and mortar, you need to find the right location that's going to bring you clientele versus online. Online can be a little bit more competitive where you're competing against 20 other businesses that are like yours. And you have to market yourself a little bit more. You have to pay more attention to detail, because one little slip up can cost you to even have bad reviews, or, you know, just you want to stay on top of your game. So like me, I kind of like both aspects of it, but I'm more so of a brick and mortar girl, to say, because I like the face to face. I like to talk to people. I like to see my clients come in. And so with online, I think the online is a little bit more work. It can be very frustrating because you always have to stay fresh. Do you kind of understand what I'm saying, Carrie? Like you always have to be new at all times. And you have to make sure your Instagram is good, your Facebook. So it's a little bit more intense. And you have to do a little bit more homework. You have to be a little hands-on. And the brick and mortar, yes, you put a lot of work in it because it's more physical, you know. And
absolutely.
But I, you know, so to me, those are the two differences. And whichever you're planning to open out there, and I think it needs to be more researched. It needs to, for you to have a business plan. Just like you have a business plan, I truly believe I have a business plan for my life itself, my personal life, and my family. A life plan, yes, and with timelines and everything. And also, you have to have a business plan, not just a business plan to present to get funding, but a business plan for yourself, for your business. What do you want your business to look like? What is the time frame? Just like I'm doing here with Carrie, I have a business plan, but it's not for financial. It's for when I'm going to get my business off the ground, which which is hairpreneur from the ground up.
Exactly. You took the words out of my mouth. I was just about to say it.
So
I literally was.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
You know, you need three business plans. You need your life business plan, and you need a business plan for you to get your business off the ground.
Yes.
And you need a business plan for your financials to present this business. So it is a lot of work to do. And
exactly.
One is more easier than the other, but just because I mentioned the online is the quick, sometimes it can be the quickest and sometimes it cannot. It's not. But it's the easiest way without all the overhead versus the brick and mortar where you have to really find the funding and, you know, you really have to do a little bit more work and you really have to risk a little bit more to make it happen. So one is more riskier than the other.
You're absolutely right. But they both require the research, and you mentioned that
exactly.
earlier.
Exactly.
The online, of course, is a lot less expensive in comparison to having a brick-and-mortar business. But several things on those folks who wish to have a brick-and-mortar, and when we say brick-and-mortar, just so that we don't leave anybody out, it means a business that you can walk into versus a business that is solely online. And some are a hybrid. They're kind of like a mixture of those two. But bear in mind, if you have selected a brick-and-mortar business, it is amazing because, because of the pandemic, lots of the brick-and-mortar owners, I'm saying that these folks who rent these commercial properties out to folks like you and me who wish to have a business, you can get really great deals right now because there's so many businesses that have gone online. So it opens it up where if you go in, you can always negotiate for 6 months free rent in some cases. And all of that is as an outpour. But for those who wish to avoid a lot of that overhead that you also mentioned, Linda C., online is definitely a much more economical option, and depending upon what type of business you have can be something that I think is the way to really look at that and the way to really consider going. So we're happy to guide you at the Hair Radio Morning Show on Hairpreneurs. Yes, I'm Carrie Hines with the amazing Linda C. You've been doing just a great job, Linda C., so super hyped about it. It was an extraordinary third episode of Hairpreneur from the Ground Up. And again, Hairpreneur is that made-up word. It's like a hair person and an entrepreneur, right?
Exactly.
Kind of merged
into
one.
Yes.
Yeah, so we really, really like it. So I think this was really good. Linda C., before we sign out for today, is there anybody that you want to shout out to, any closing thoughts for the hairpreneurs to carry them over to the next episode?
Just to everyone that's listening, all the future hairpreneurs and all the current hairpreneurs, and especially to you, Carrie, and to your wonderful radio show, and just my top five, and that's pretty much it. And I love being here. I love spending that moment with you and your listeners, and hopefully that I know we're helping them out there.
We are
and
making the difference.
Yes, we are, definitely. And I'm glad I am part of making that difference. I'm very proud and I'm very grateful that you have invited me to your show again. Looking forward to growing with you and all my hairpreneurs out there, and I can't wait to be in your in the hair show out in August in Atlantic City.
Yes.
I'm very excited about that. So hopefully I can get to meet our hairpreneurs and also the listeners.
Yes.
So I'm super excited.
And you can go to hairnationexpo.biz to find out all about our live events. And we're going to keep you guys posted on that right throughout all of that we're doing with Hairpreneur. So, Linda C., thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for
thank
having
you.
Me. Always a pleasure.
All right. You got it.
Hi, I'm Jossie from Jossie's All Natural. Have you been struggling with keeping your natural hair healthy or desire to achieve substantial hair growth? Then Jossie's All Natural is here to help you. My natural creams, conditioners, lotions, hair mists, balms, shampoos, and detanglers are gentle enough for the whole family and all hair types. Not only do I provide natural hair products, I also give step-by-step techniques to ensure healthy hair in a pure and gentle fashion, from roots to ends. Come on to visit me at www.jossiesallnatural.com. That's JossiesAllNatural.com for a true natural hair experience like you've never had before.
Clint Beast on the boom.
You niggas be tripping.
What up, bro? You rocking with Stick by the Shit. I'm inviting everybody to take a look and listen to see what I got going on. Catch me streaming on all music platforms under Statewide Chip or Statewide Bosses. You can also find me on social media, Statewide Chip on Facebook, Statewide Chip Official on Instagram, and Statewide Chip or Statewide Bosses on YouTube.
Ladies, do you love a man with a well-groomed and sexy beard? Men, do you suffer from patchiness or irritation and want a fuller beard? Well, let me introduce you to the hottest beard care products on the market. Rugged Evolution features 16 amazing balms, oils, shampoos, and accessories. Our products are sure to meet the demands of all your beard care needs. For more information, go to ruggedevo.com. That's ruggedevo.com.
And remember, rugged is the new smooth.
You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show with Terry Hines. Stay tuned. Now you can listen to our 24/7 Hair Radio broadcast network and shop all in the same place. Go to hairradio.com. We've got around-the-clock hair and beauty radio talk. And while you're there, buy your favorite books, hair products, tickets to live hair and beauty events, and much more. And if you'd like to feature your products in our hairradio.com website store or be a guest on the Hair Radio Broadcast Network, contact us at hairradio.com and reach the world.
Very special broadcast today, and I want to bring to the line my very special guest co-host for the entire episode, the one and only Mary Reed Johnson from Hair Head Heart joins us today. Mary, good morning.
Hello.
Yes.
Good morning,
hello.
Terry.
Hello. Yes, and again, we are so excited on this very special day. It's episode number two, on our 10 most fascinating guests on the Hair Radio Morning Show. So I am so excited to continue this journey with you, Mary, my amazing guest co-host for the time. So tell us, what did you think, especially since we, started with this new series, this new radio series, counting down on fascinating
folks?
You are
just a genius. Yes, you're just a genius. I'm very, very excited. And this is encouraging the into each of the segments, because you are going to be surprised at some of the guests that Gary's has had over time.
Yes, thank you so much, Mary, for that. It is appreciated. And I'm super hyped about it. And we're going to talk about not just our amazing guests that we've had on that makes them so fascinating and what makes them so fascinating. And a lot of this, you're going to figure out what makes them tick. But we'll also have a chance to chat with you a little bit throughout the episode about the amazing work you're doing at the three H's, I call it, Hair Head Heart. And we're excited to talk with you more about your endeavors as well. But first, let us take a look at number 10 and number 9 that we covered in episode number 1. So we had this amazing gentleman back at number 10. His name is Michael Hopkins, and he's the veteran. It's the Vet Talk radio show, let me get that out. And he's the host and one of the producers on the program. We're super excited to have him land at number 10 on our countdown. Number nine, we found a wonderful young lady who had, she kind of struck a chord with me about her desire to connect with the legacy of Madam C.J. Walker. Her name is Tara. And Tara joined me on the Hair Radio Morning Show briefly as a wonderful contributor. So that was really exciting. And I think her part, what she added to the program, has been unmatchable. So she landed at number nine on our countdown. And that means, Mary, today is number eight. Yes.
I got to say, Tara was contagious as far as her enthusiasm, her homage to Madam C.J. Walker, and just the experience, and it was just beautiful. So if you did not need to listen.
Yes, absolutely. And so I'm super, super hyped about it. So we're going to go ahead. Now, number eight begins this episode. Our second episode today. You're not going to guess who this person is, so I'm just going to go ahead and tell you and put it on out there. She has kind of got on our radar earlier this year, although I've known who she was for many, many years. I've seen her and all of her work play out on TV networks like Court TV and things of that nature, and she's been a special contributor on many folks' programs. But I was delighted when the one and only, one I consider one of the top attorneys out there, Lisa Bloom from television, joined us right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show broadcast. And I just had to, she's been with us a few times, and I thought she's just incredibly fascinating when the people that she represents, and she's so passionate about these folks and what it has meant and what her work has been like. So I had to get her as part of our amazing, our 10 most fascinating guests. And she lands at number eight on this list, the one and only TV's Lisa Bloom. We'll take a listen, Mary, and we're gonna chat about this. This is Lisa's most recent appearance on the broadcast, and I think you're going to find it fascinating. Again, Lisa Bloom.
Exciting.
At number eight. Super, super, super excited. All right, here we go. You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now, my very special guest joining us right now, you guys know her. She's been with us before. Very recognized name out there in the world of law. It is my honor to bring back to the Hair Radio Morning Show the one and only Lisa Bloom. Good morning and welcome back
to
the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Now, Lisa, I want to jump right on in. There's so much going on. There's so many trials and cases and so many things happening out there. We had to go right straight to the very best. And so you were certainly on that short list. Lisa, tell us now, you are doing something very important with your work at the Bloom Firm. So you guys are, what is this where you're kind of like monitoring this big case here in New York with the, you know, it's all about the Jeffrey Epstein case. It's tied into that. Her name is Ghislaine Maxwell. What can you tell us about all of this and make sense to us?
So for several years now, I have fought for justice on behalf of eight victims of Jeffrey Epstein, and he's the very wealthy financier who is accused of sexually abusing underage girls and young women. I represented eight. We fought for them in litigation here in New York for several years, and we ultimately won victory, significant settlement awards for all eight, I'm very proud to say.
Wow.
One of those victims also has allegations against Ghislaine Maxwell, his longtime friend, confidant, girlfriend, assistant. She wore a lot of different hats. There's now a criminal trial underway here in New York for Ghislaine Maxwell. Jeffrey Epstein took his own life in 2019, so we can't get justice against him, but this trial is now against Ghislaine Maxwell. And so I'm here on behalf of my clients to monitor the trial, to to keep an eye on it and to be a voice for the victims, because I think that's where the focus should be, on the tremendous pain that these two people caused to so many people, the lifelong psychological injuries that they suffer. And that's what I'm here essentially doing. And I sat through yesterday the opening statements so I could hear both sides. And now I've heard the first couple of witnesses and seen the first cross-examination of one of the victims. And it's very powerful stuff. But so far I'm optimistic that justice will be done.
Awesome, because that's what we wanted to find out. Now, Lisa, I just want to say that, folks, so the whole thing is that she's been painted, Ghislaine Maxwell, as perhaps a scapegoat in all this. There are folks out there who are going to say, well, maybe she didn't do this, or maybe she didn't. I'm sure all this is going to come out in these days to come, but what can you say to folks? And I feel, you know, especially those folks that you represent, who and the, you know, the person who's really making this accusation against her. So what do you say when you hear this? And you kind of, you're hearing it, you know, firsthand right there inside the courtroom.
Yes.
What do you say?
Well, this is the primary defense. They began their opening statement by saying, since the days of Eve and the apple, women have been blamed for the bad conduct by men. And that's a true statement, right? But in this case, the prosecution is proving their case against Ghislaine Maxwell, not against Jeffrey Epstein. And so they are constantly having the witnesses talk about what Ghislaine did. She was there. She participated. She lured the victims in. She was at his side. She was present, not for all of the sexual abuse, but for a lot of it. And I think that would be sufficient, that she knew exactly what was going on, and she brought girls into this environment where then they were abused. So she's not being scapegoated for what somebody else did. She's being tried for the actions that she took, the choices that she made.
I was about to say, in any knowledge of it or any part in it is too much, in my opinion.
That's right.
You know, so I have to say, we, you know, and the general public, and this is why I really wanted you to be on the show today, Lisa, because it's hard for us, GP, to kind of navigate some of this information. There's so much out there. I hate to even go to social media. There's so much information going back and forth and on all the TV channels and all of that. So I wanted the fans of the show, because I heard different opinions popping up and all of this. I said, no, we've got to get some clarity on this. What should our takeaway be with some of these huge cases? And we'll definitely talk a little bit more, because I want to get a little bit more on this whole Jeffrey Epstein case and more with the Ghislaine Maxwell trial that's happening right now. But what do you say? How do we even navigate some of this stuff? I mean, it is just poor. And there's another big case starting. Like, my goodness.
Yeah, so there's a lot. And what I want people to understand is that every case is a very specific inquiry into the facts and the law of that case. A lot of the cases that we see are really not a good opportunity to make a political statement. So let's talk about Kyle Rittenhouse, for example.
Yes,
in my opinion, the left, and I'm a very progressive left-wing person, the left should never have made the Kyle Rittenhouse case into a political case. This is about a white guy who shot three other white people at a protest. I did not see this as a case that had to do with race. And almost the entire situation was caught on video, on multiple videos. So the only question there was, did he shoot in self-defense? That was the question for the jury. It was not a question about, should he have been there in the first place? Should he have had a gun? Because he legally could have that gun, because we have crazy gun laws in this country, in my opinion. Okay? So the only question was whether he should have been there or not, whether he should have had the gun or not. At the moment that he shot each of these three people, was he being threatened? And the video showed that he was. And so he was acquitted on self-defense. Now, you know, in my opinion, we need massive reform of our gun laws. We should never have a 17-year-old walking around in a provocative situation with an AR-15. That is completely crazy, and that is going to lead to people getting shot. So we need to reform our gun laws. And frankly, these protests did get that particular one. It did get out of control, and the police allowed that. That's unfortunate.
So I represent three Black Lives Matter protesters who got shot by police. So there's a lot of wrongdoing to go around. But the Kyle Rittenhouse case, to me, should not have been one that was elevated to a big public discussion because I didn't think it was worth that. Now, the one that should have gotten more attention, in my opinion, was the Ahmaud Arbery case. That was
and tell us about that, yes.
Yeah, that was clearly about racism. It was a horrifying case. You know, I wrote a book about the Trayvon Martin case a few years ago and about the racism in the criminal justice system and how abhorrent it is. And the Ahmaud Arbery case reminded me a lot of the Trayvon Martin case. Here's a guy who's minding his own business, Mr. Arbery, jogging. You know,
jogging,
he would get every right to do, just like Trayvon Martin was walking down the street, minding his own business
with
his Skittles in his pocket.
Exactly.
And in both cases, the white guys who pursued them thought that they were criminals because of their skin color, because they thought that other people who were Black in the past had committed crimes. And so to attribute the wrongs of some Black people to all Black people is the very definition of racism. And that's what happened in the Trayvon Martin case. That's what happened in the Ahmaud Arbery case. And in the Ahmaud Arbery case, we have three white guys who chose to follow him to try to get him to pull over. Of course, he got scared because he's being followed by these random guys in a pickup truck. How scary is that? And ultimately, when they accosted him, he fought back. And then they tried to say that's self-defense. No, you can't assault someone, and then when they fight back, you claim self-defense. That's ridiculous. That's what they claim.
Exactly.
And thank goodness the jury agreed. And the prosecution did bring racism into the case, which I was pleased to see because they failed to do that in the Trayvon Martin case. I thought that was a big mistake. They did talk about the racial angle of the case. It was clearly a hate crime. And thank God they were convicted, as they should have been. They should spend the rest of their lives in prison, which I'm sure that they will. So that, to me, is justice. Of course, it doesn't bring back the victim. My heart breaks for him and his family. You know, I have a dear friend who's African American and who's a runner.
Yes.
And he says to me to this day, he's afraid to go out running in the morning. You know, he's a big Black guy, lives in a white neighborhood, and he's afraid.
Yeah, I can certainly relate here in my section here in Brooklyn, New York, and I totally understand. It's just inside of you. But, you know, I'll have to say this, and I totally agree with you 1,000%. This is something that I was already conscious of, not to be running down the street. And this was long before any case because you have to understand that this is a potentiality right now. You know, it's always been, but it's even heightened right now. Now, I have to say, Lisa.
He goes running at 6 a.m. and he says, you know, it's cold. I want to wear a hoodie. But I'm a big Black guy.
Yeah. Oh, a hoodie. Oh.
And I thought, it's my heart breaks. You know, it never, as a white woman, it never enters my mind that, like, I can't wear a hoodie if I'm cold.
That you can't wear a hoodie.
Yeah.
That you can't make any sudden movements. And to be really honest with you, Lisa, what's really awful is that you don't even have to even be doing any of those things. You can, just to be walking down the street, your mere presence, just as a Black person, male in my case, is enough to make folks think of crime. You know, it's almost your color's been criminalized to a degree. And so what happens, unfortunately, this is what you have to kind of deal with on a daily basis, in and out, where folks grabbing their kids, they don't mean any harm. Don't ever think that they are thinking that you're going to attack their kids. It's almost subconscious at this point. You know, so I don't, I don't necessarily blame people. I get why they are like that, because this is what is, you know, channeled to us through so many different things. But, Lisa, my big thing is, when I turn back to this case, and there are some big names tied to this Jeffrey Epstein case. And I shouldn't say that, because this is the Ghislaine Maxwell trial, that she's on trial for her, you know, alleged doings or what have you. So, but there's some huge names. That's kind of like part of the gossip, if you will, about it, or the unproven facts or what have you, where they're saying that maybe she knows something and she's not saying, and maybe she should be saying, and this is, you know, she's got big names to point out. And what is, you know, I'm like, what can we listen to?
Lisa. Yes. So that came into the trial today. The pilot.
Oh, really?
Jeffrey Epstein's plane. Yeah, he named some very prominent people
who
were on Epstein's private plane with him. He named Donald Trump. He named Bill Clinton, the violinist Isaac Perlman, the actor Chris Tucker, the actor Kevin Spacey, of all people, who has had his own.
He already has another set of things going on that he's been cleared of, I believe, at this point, but he's been through his own set of things.
Yeah, so Prince Andrew, of course, and the British press is all here because...
And that's a big one there.
Prince Andrew angle.
Prince Andrew
is currently being sued for sexual abuse by one of Jeffrey Epstein's accusers, who says that Epstein sent her, basically, to Prince Andrew, trafficked her. So those names came in, and they came in this trial not to show there's some kind of vast conspiracy with all these people, and I'm sure that, you know, maybe some of them did not know what Jeffrey Epstein was up to behind closed doors. Maybe all of them didn't know. I don't know what they knew, but we know that they flew on the plane with him. But what I will say is that this was very intimidating to the victims. Now, the reason why it's being brought in is, you know, imagine being a 14-year-old girl and this wealthy man who's taken an interest in you is friendly with a former president, friendly with Donald Trump, who ends up being a future president. I guess they didn't know that at
exactly.
the time. But, you know, these very successful, big-name people.
Powerful,
and the victims
powerful
say that they talked about this all the time. They name-dropped to intimidate the victims and to terrify them into silence. You know, are you like a little no-name 14-year-old girl? Are you going to go up against that kind of people? I mean, there's no way. And that's why they took so long to come forward.
Wow. And I just, we're grateful that we have folks like the Bloom Firm that's doing the work, that's helping these women to have a voice. We are going to continue to follow this, and because it's just, we didn't quite know what we should have as our takeaway. And my other thing to you, and you mentioned it a little while ago, and I just want to get your take on it. The videos, the video footage. Lisa, why does it seem, and I think we might have touched on this the last time you were on our show, just a teensy bit, but why does it seem like the video footage, it's almost like you can't really trust what you see because of the way it's kind of spun, you know, like showing like incidents and things like that. So nothing necessarily particular, you know, specific because all of these things, we're watching these different videos, and it's almost like each side kind of spins it the way that they, I guess that's what they're supposed to do. But why does it seem like we can't really trust what we see, or there's always something more to it? You know, shouldn't that be enough, these videos? Like, when I see them on, I'm like, oh, how, that's so obvious. But there's more to it.
Let me answer that, and then I'm going to have to go. So,
video
footage is very important. Juries love it because they feel like video doesn't lie. Human beings might lie or might get things wrong, but there it is on video, right? And I think that was important, as I said, in the Kyle Rittenhouse case. It was also important in the Ahmaud Arbery case because these guys were idiotic enough to video some of what they did. Right?
Exactly.
But it's not the whole story because in the criminal law, we look at not just what happened, but the intent. Did somebody intend to do something? And we have to get inside their mind. And there's no video yet that gets inside of somebody's mind. Did they do something accidentally? Did they shoot in self-defense? Was it an intentional, premeditated act? In a civil case, we look at more than the video because we want to know what the damage is to the victim, how it affected their lives. And so the video shows part of a story, but it doesn't show the whole story. But I agree with you that video, I think that it is important. It's usually the most important piece of evidence when there is video in a case. Juries really like it. They look at it closely. Like the George Floyd case, thank God there was a video. I mean, as horrifying as it was,
absolutely.
Thank God there's that video that showed exactly what happened, and now that killer is behind bars, right? And
absolutely.
He's a police officer, and we saw the video, and it's just so horrifying. And look, millions of people took to the streets in the Black Lives Matter movement. I was one of them. Because we see what's happening, and it's just too much. It's too painful. So I think video is very important.
Lisa Bloom of the Bloom Firm. Your website, again, is thebloomfirm.com. want to send folks there. And Lisa, can you please come back soon? We're going to get inside and get warmed up. And then come back soon to us here and keep us abreast of what's happening, okay?
Thank
you know how much we appreciate
me.
You. You've got
you
it.
Thank you for having me.
All right. We are back live on the other side of this. You're listening to a very special episode. Yes, my co-host, Mary Reed Johnson. Mary, what did you think?
Hello.
That's,
well, you know,
we just placed Lisa
amazing.
Bloom
you,
at number
you know,
eight.
Eddie Murphy had in one of his skits many years ago a line, and it said, who are you going to believe, me or your lion eyes? And it just resonates.
Yes.
Believe your eyes.
Yes, the thing. I love the conversation. Lisa is always very intriguing to me. She does the work. And, you know, you guys see her with the Bloom Firm, and she's out there doing all the things, talking, representing a lot of these women who wouldn't have anybody to really represent them, so to speak. So we just love that she takes the charge with this, and she makes the rounds. And she's not afraid to get in and talk the dirty talk, you know, the things that make some folks maybe feel uncomfortable. She goes there, and I just enjoy talking to her. She's fascinating to me, and I thought the chat was really interesting. Yes, and how timely is it to cover all of this?
Yes, I'm thankful that, you know, she's putting in the work, and like you say, calling out what is, and that's just really important, and it's nice to know that it is being done. Are there parallels, or is it just me, between R. Kelly and, you know, his recent, not acquittal, but where he was ended up in jail, and the case that they're presenting with Ms. Maxwell? They really just seem very much the same. So if one goes to jail, then the other should definitely go to jail.
Well, I think that the whole Ms. Maxwell thing, I think there's a lot to be said. There's a whole lot, like even in the interview with Lisa, where she was talking about the big names that are associated with it, that alone is just remarkable and may – you know, there still may be a whole lot left to come. We don't know yet. But my whole thing with that and why it was number eight on, why Lisa Bloom was number eight on our countdown for the 10 most fascinating guests on our show is that what should our takeaway be on all these things? So that's where that comes from. Hey, you're going to love number seven because it's on a lighter note and it harkens back to a great time. I'm raising my hand in my life, and that was back in the amazing 90s for a moment. So we're going to take a walk back and kind of peer back to this period, and maybe even earlier. There were some great songs, some great music, and I was here in the Northeast. I have to say, Mary Reed Johnson, I was out here in the Northeast, New Jersey, I think, at the time. But what amazed me is that there was this whole brand of music, not quite our old R&B, our reliable R&B, I should say, or the old soul sounds so much, but there was a little pieces of that in there, pop and all that other stuff, but it was mainly, we called it high energy at the time, high energy, just a euphemism for kind of fast-paced music, but it was really great. A lot of folks who are of Latino descent gravitated towards it at the time, and it really was led by this amazing power supergroup with three women. Hold it. I think there are three or four. It was Exposé was the name of the group. Do you remember Exposé? They really were amazing. They had a big, big hit record. Well, they had quite a few big hits. They had several top 10 songs on Billboard charts, on the pop charts. This is not some, you know, esoteric remote little thing. This was huge. So I loved Exposé, and I love that period of music, Mary. Isn't that something? And Yeah, so we are going to, well, let me tell you who the number seven guest is. It's the man behind Exposé. His name is Louis Martinet, and he is the person who literally created the group, got all the ladies, and wrote all the songs for the first album. Yeah, so Louis Martinet is the gentleman who lands at number seven. I had a chance to chat with Louis. This is what he had to say, and we'll talk on the other side. I think it's a very interesting interview. Take a listen. Mary, take a listen. We're going to chat about this. Louis Martinet. You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now my next guest comes to us from the world of music. It is my honor to welcome the one and only Louis Martinet to the Hair Radio Morning Show. Good morning,
Hello.
Louis.
Good morning. How are you?
I am doing just fantastic. Now, I've got to tell everybody, you are truly an innovative producer, songwriter, and I call a visionary also. You created the popular girl group Exposé and so much more, and we're going to get into all of that. And they were the first to have four top 10 hits on the Billboard Hot 100 charts. From a debut album, that is. And I just want to say welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
Yes. Now, listen, the style of music or the genre is largely known as freestyle music. So I'm going to kind of jump on in and start there. Would you be kind enough to explain to everybody how you describe the phrase freestyle music?
So the best way I can describe it is when disco kind of hit the wall and everybody was hate disco kind of thing, there was still a need for dance music. So I started, playing around with the new electronic equipment that is just coming out at that time in the early 80s and, started writing songs that were, different than the disco but still danceable, And then I did a bunch of songs, and then I put a girl group together, like you said, and there was actually a first generation of them, which is called Alejandra, Lori, and Joya. So that was the first generation. And then we had some problems. The girls didn't like to travel, and they wanted to kind of do their own thing too. So they actually in California found Jeanette, which is the next generation. So they actually helped me out in finding the next generation. So it wasn't a bad fallout or anything. It was kind of like a mutual thing that, that we were going to move in different directions. And they say, hey, Louis, there's this girl that sounds just like Ali, which sang for her return. That's short for Alejandra.
Right.
And her name is Jeanette. So I flew to L.A. and met her, and then we signed her, and then I signed another girl named Ann Curlis, and then another one named Joya. The first generation is, I made a mistake, it's Ali, Alejandra, Lori, and Sandra. That's the first generation. Then the second generation is Jeanette, in this order, Jeanette, Joya, and Ann. And that was, just to be clear, I like to be clear with my, I threw in the wrong name in the first generation.
I was going to jump on in and, because, and that's really important. And I saw that and I said, because I think one of the individuals, I believe Sandra, I think it is, I think she passed away. And I just wanted to say, and there was so much that went into all of that. And I saw and read all about your relationship with, working with Clive, from Clive Davis, from Arista and all of that back in those times and working with this, these amazing women and just being such a creative force. But I want to go back a little bit, Louis. I want to ask you about the beginning because, you always had music inside of you in some capacity or another. Can you tell the folks, now, where are you from, and how did you get into music to begin with?
Well, I was originally born in Cuba, then moved when I was very young to California, and I started playing in bands. We actually put bands together where I played percussion, and we used to rehearse actually in my mom's and dad's garage, and we used to practice there all the time and then do little parties and stuff for free. You know, we weren't good enough to charge, so we did the parties for free. but we loved it, you know. We just wanted to perform.
Absolutely.
And then I moved to Miami. Yeah, then I moved to Miami, and then I started actually DJing. Yeah. And then I met some people that had a studio, and I was in another band where I was playing drums at this time. It was a rock band, and then this guy Frank, he had a recording studio, a small studio in a warehouse, and since I'm a DJ, he says, "Oh, you record music?" I goes, "Yeah, I record music. I write and record." So he says, "Great, so come over and do some music." So he thinks I'm going to do dance music, and I'm doing rock music. So he was like, "Well, that's not what I was expecting." But then I ended up starting to do the music, and back then, believe it or not, it was called hip hop.
Really?
The Latin freestyle, yeah, the Latin freestyle that you know was called hip hop, and then rap started taking the name over and calling it hip hop. So then they changed the hip hop to freestyle now, Latin freestyle. But in the very beginning, in the early '80s, it was called hip hop. The Latin freestyle was actually called hip hop. But then it kind of. So that was it. Yeah, that was kind of like a unique little thing there that happened.
Absolutely. I was just thinking as you said that, and I remember even some of my research I saw in New York where we had Hot 97 or whatever, and before that was known in the hip-hop world in that way, it was like a kind of devoted to freestyle type music. So maybe there's a lot more to that. Very interesting, I really have to say. So that's how you kind of got your foray into working with the studio and getting into music and all of that. And I saw where you guys, where you had created the, you know, a music label. But what was it that was the beginning little impetus that said, hold it, let's pull together an act. Let's find or create an act. And I know you were working with others, but how did that, was that your idea to kind of pull a group together?
Yeah, I kind of like actually thought of three girls because I always liked the Supremes, and I went, you know, I should do a girl group like the Supremes, three girls, and I'll name them Exposed. At first it was called Exposed, and then the labels didn't like Exposed, so we changed it to Exposé. So if you
and
if
they
you
both work, let me just officially say that I'm going to tell those folks they both work. I love both.
Yeah, both names are good. But if you remember back in late 83, early 84, mm-hmm. it was Exposed for a couple of years.
Okay.
You know, and then when Arista signed the group, then we changed it to Exposé. So there was a single that was on my label that was Point and Return. Those are still out there. I know people that still have them. So
the originals. Now you guys went in and re-recorded those songs, correct? With the next version of the group, is that right?
Yeah, we re-recorded not the music, just the vocals. The music was the same.
Uh-huh. Wow, I love this. Well, listen, there are lots of questions that I have to ask you as a producer, and I kind of want to go back a little bit. Folks, if you're just joining us, let me just break it on down for you. You're listening to the All-New Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now, my very special guest with me today is Louis Martinet. Now, he is a producer. You are a writer, a producer. You're legendary to me in all that you have done with the amazing hits that you've had with Exposé and others. And you've worked with quite a few. And I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about it because, you know, when I think back, I grew up I'm in Brooklyn, New York now, and our show goes all over the world. But when I remember back in the day and being growing up in northern New Jersey, so let me just make it clear because I think that was how I was introduced to freestyle music. And I mean, I remember, you know, on the radio, and I remember KTU when it came along, and just nonstop music. The freestyle music was just everywhere. You couldn't escape it. But then when I look back, I said, well, you know, I'm kind of, how was R&B, tinges of R&B, was it? Because it seemed to have been kind of like a divided world as we moved along. And R&B was R&B, and everybody had their little tranches. But to me, when I listen to Exposé's music, I'm blown away with the R&B, the soul that goes through the words and the music and just the feel. And I know that's awful to kind of, you know, you shouldn't pigeonhole or try to put things in different categories, because music is music, and there are no boundaries. And I just love, you know, and I don't know if I look at myself as the targeted demo per se, but I love what you guys, you know, what Exposé represented.
Thank you, thank you.
So
yeah, thank
great
you.
Great job to you. Yes, absolutely. So now, was that, you know, and you say, and I think that's what it is, you say that you were influenced somewhat by the Supremes in terms
yeah.
of girl groups and all of that. So could that have, I mean, I hear a lot of wonderful, wonderful, you know, kind of different feels and different genres in those songs that speak to everybody. So that wasn't necessarily purposely done. You were just doing what was inside of you. How did that, you know, how did it feel to reach so many people across so many different, you know, genres or spectrums? Or, you know, how do you look at that? Or do you have that, you know, do you feel the same way? Or
yeah, no, I tried. I tried to let the thing is that I'm influenced by a lot of different genres. I love R&B. I love hip-hop. I love rock. I grew up with rock. I played rock originally before I DJed. I played in rock bands in California, and then when I got here to Miami. And so all those influences, you know, they come out when I'm doing music, you know, really without meaning to, you know. So,
Absolutely.
Yeah, like, you know, and even the Beatles, you know, and groups like that, you know, I get some influences from without knowing it. I later notice it, but, I don't knowingly do it.
Right, exactly.
So,
Well, I'm loving it. Well, now, Louis, I want to ask you about Exposé. And I also, you know, back in the day, I didn't know until I was doing a little deep dive research, but that you had also worked with the Cover Girls. And I had, so, you know, but there I always thought there was this huge competition thing. It was either you were in the Exposé group, fan-based group, or you were in the Cover Girls. It was rarely that you were in both. So how did that come about? And I think I was reading somewhere how you felt about it, but share with everybody. You know, do you recall any of that and working with the Cover Girls
of
that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and other girl groups that I worked with that I actually created was another group called Sequel. I don't know if you knew that.
Yes.
And, so we're kind of like all friends, you know, Andy Panda from New York. He put together the Cover Girls, and he said, hey, you want to do a song for them? I go, sure, you know, and vice versa, you know, we work on with each other, you know, we kind of like, you know, and we're all kind of, you know, friends and work together with, you know, like, there's other great producers like Arthur Baker and things like that, that do great music, and we kind of like, you know, we helped each other. We didn't, you know, like,
there was no
try to, exactly. We helped each other. Like, if they needed to use a studio, they can come to mine, and vice versa if I go to New York and all that. So, yeah, we worked together. You know, we didn't have any animosities. So it was kind of like, you know, the better they did, the better maybe I would do too, you know. So
well, I have to tell
you. It was good.
It was good. I have to say, you know, I started putting on my thinking hat, a little thinking cap here, and I said, I remember interviewing only one other freestyle artist, and, you know, I've interviewed a lot of folks, but I remember, and she was just the most kindest, gracious young lady I had pretty much had ever met, and that was little Susie back in New Jersey. I remember she kind of came to the radio station and did an interview. I was at an actual station back then, and I just have to say, you know, so your genre, the freestyle genre was represented incredibly well. But then,
yeah, all the artists, yeah, they were all great. They were all very, very nice and you know, and helpful. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
like I said, it was great working with a lot of artists that I worked with.
Well, I can hear that, Lewis. You have that kind of personality, though I could just tell you could work with anybody. You know, I can hear it. You have such a, you know, just down to earth and easy to relate to. And, you know, and I'm sure that was, you know, what was communicated throughout your music and your endeavors and all of that wonderful good stuff. So now I want to turn to, you know, inspiring folks. And I know you guys had a lot of hit records. You know, how did it feel to have those top 10 hits, you know, and this is on Billboard's top charts, if you will. You know, was it considered, it wasn't so much crossover, I don't think, but it crossed over, I think, to a lot of different areas. I think we talked about that. But so how did that feel? And also being inspiring so many other folks out there who, you know, are now kind of, dance music is big, or it's huge. So how do you feel about that, and what's your take on all of that?
Well, the Billboard, the some of my product crossover into the pop. I actually had, like you mentioned, when we first talked, Seasons Changer was number one on the Pop 100, number one on the R&B also, and other charts. So it kind of like, you know, different genres that had jumped, and then other songs also did the same thing. And, you know, that also led me to work with artists like Jermaine Jackson, Jermaine Stewart, Debbie Gibbs.
Now, what I saw the songs, I saw the one that you did with Jermaine Jackson that I think you had originally intended for the other artists to record. And then, which is a great song, by the way. I listened to it even this morning. I'm like, wow, this is an awesome song. To me, your songs, these are not just, you know, just dancey dance songs and just put them away and forget about them. They actually stand up and, you know, in time. Like, I listened, I said, wow, this is great. I mean, quite frankly. And I said, you know, to me, these songs can be re-recorded or re-released and all that wonderful good stuff. Do you feel the same way? Do you feel that they've, like, stood the test of time?
Yeah, I think so. I listen to them all the time. Like I like you said, I listen to Feel the Need, the one that I did for Jermaine Jackson.
Sure.
Yeah, I love that song. And
I remember that time frame because he had put out Don't Take It Personal and all of that. I remember that. And which project did you do for Jermaine Stewart? I love Jermaine Stewart. I'm a big fan of his. You know, we lost him way too soon.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, which project did you work with Jermaine on? Jermaine Stewart. Do you remember that?
Yes, I worked I did a dance remix to We Don't Have to Take Your Clothes Off.
Really? Probably the one I was dancing to.
I did a dance remix to that came out really, really good, I think, you know, and it played in a lot of the clubs.
Yeah.
Because of the dance remix.
I have to give you credit on the remix. I don't know if folks give you enough credit on that. Your remixes are amazing. So, I don't know. I know because you're such an amazing writer and you know, producer extraordinaire and all of that. But also, the remixes that I've heard and that you've done. So this stems from being a great DJ down there in Florida. Where did that come from that you have this ability to take these songs and literally reconstruct them, if you will, and turn out great, you know, tracks like that?
I think probably from being a DJ and also a musician, it helps too because, you know, I would see what works on the floor and then I kind of try to incorporate it into my mixes so that the it keeps the floor dancing. Like when you hear Pointer Return, people just jump out of their chairs,
exactly.
Which is like it would give me goosebumps. You know, I would just, I mean, I'm at the club sitting, you know, in the corner, and then the DJ plays Pointer Return, and I see people kind of like scream, get up, and go to the dance floor, and it's the best feeling in the world.
Yes, and that's when you really knew you had something. That song, wow. And I loved all of, I mean, Let Me Be the One, just, you know, Seasons Change, all of those amazing songs, I have to say. You know,
thank you, thank you.
Yes, you're, please. You know, these are, it's not just me, it's, you know, big, big hit records out there. So now I have to also say, I love the lineup that you had, and by the time I got, you know, I think, Joya, and I think you had mentioned was one of the leads, and Jeanette and Anne. So I just loved that lineup that you had at that time. I just thought, my goodness. So have you stayed in touch with these amazing women?
Yes, yes. Yeah, I talk to Joya all the time. The other girls are more, you know, in a different state and stuff, so I don't talk to them too much. But Joya, yeah, we keep in touch all the time. We actually worked on a couple of things together, you know, not too long ago. So I keep in touch with Joya mostly.
Wow. Now, you are still in the music game. You haven't left the music game. Let me just make that clear. So what can you tell us out there? What might we be able to look forward to, or, you know, anything you want to add to that?
Well, I'm working on several projects. I'm working on a song for the COVID relief. It's called, we're calling it for now, Sun After the Rain, for now. And what I'm doing is kind of like trying to put together like a We Are the World kind of thing with a bunch of different artists. I got Larry Blackman from Cameo. Bernard from Surface.
We just had David on our show. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, David,
Bernard Jackson from Surface, right. and a few rappers too, Tretch and Lazy Bone, and Lazy Bone, and everybody's you know giving their time, you know, because they think you know it's good to try to help other people. So everybody's been very, very nice. We're trying to get Gladys Knight on there, which I think we will. The Womack sisters.
Yes.
We already got Butch from Tavares.
Oh yes, yeah. Oh gosh.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think they did the song "Heaven Must Be Missing." And I think that was one of Tavares. If I'm not
That's mistaken. The one. Yes, that was Tavares. Yes. Their biggest one was, though, the ballad, Remember What I Told You to Forget?
Oh, hold it. No, I don't. What was the biggest one?
That was their biggest hit. So Remember What I Told You to Forget.
Oh, okay. Oh, man. Well, listen, I just love them. I love all of these groups, and I'm just blown away, and I just wish you nothing but the best on these projects. And
Thank you.
Yes, let us know how you're coming along with them, you know, and any folks that we could send in your direction, we will. We absolutely will.
Great, yeah. Thank you. I have a few little compilations that I did in the 80s that I have on iTunes, so if I think you were going to check them out yourself. I don't know if you did. It was called Freestyle Soft Beach Style.
I think I checked out so much of your music that it's not even funny. I went to, I think I was on Spotify, I was on so many different things and looking at every single thing, and I listened to song after song, some of which I have to really say I had forgotten the titles, and then when I listened to them, I was like, I remember that song, and I remember it for that. Now, I do want to touch on one other part of this back in the day, because to me, you're working with Clive Davis or producing these albums and all of that. That, you know, he was, it might have been around the time he was working with Whitney and Aretha and all these big people.
It was a time.
Yeah, that was a big deal. I said, my goodness.
Clive Davis is a genius, you know, when it comes to putting projects together and teams together. Yeah, he's a genius.
Yeah, he's a genius. And Kashif, the late Kashif.
Kashif, I worked with him on a song. I did a song for him.
Exactly. I'm like, wow. So I know you don't like to be considered so much a legend out there, but you are. And I have to tell everybody, I mean, you know, of course for me, I kind of stumbled across because I just love Seasons Change so much. It has never left anything for me, you know, not too long without playing it or every so often going back and listening. And I looked up the words, and I was just so moved by this. I mean, you're just, in order to write like that, it's got to come from somewhere. So we just love it. And, you know, and then to figure out that you had done all that you were responsible for writing an album. And I'm like, and I think I asked you about freestyle, if you were familiar. I'm going to put myself out there on blast. Now I'm like, he's the king of freestyle. My God. And I just learned so much from reading and finding out and all of this wonderful good stuff. I love Stevie B. I love the whole entire genre and all that it represents. So good stuff. So, Louis, anything just to tell the folks, they're budding writers out there, budding songwriters. I'm one. I'm raising my hand right now. So what kind of advice can you give to someone like myself? You know, we've gotten lyrics. We've got the lyrics down, and I saw about, what advice? Let me just go there. What advice can you share in terms of how we should get started or the next step after you've got piles and piles of songs?
Well, what I kind of think about sometimes is that when you write songs, you tend to want to write them so deep and so great that you kind of like missing the audience. So what I try to tell everybody, just keep it simple, keep it catchy, keep it commercial, and then you know you'll get that magic in that song. In my albums, if you listen to them, you know, you'll hear that I do very commercial songs. I try to at least, but then I throw in there a couple of songs like you'll hear in the first album. You hear a song called December, and the second one you call Didn't Hurt to Hurt Me. Those are deeper songs that you know that.
Well, all right, we're back live. Yes, you are listening to a very, very special edition of the Hit Radio Morning Show. We're actually counting down 10 of our most fascinating guests who've been right here on our broadcast. I have to say, you guys were just listening to number 8, Mr. Louis Martinet, who created the expose. I want to bring back to the line my brand new legendary co-host who is helping us out as we count down these chart-topping folks, Mary Ree Johnson from Hair Head Heart. Good morning, so, Mary.
Good morning again. He was fascinating. And, you know,
Louis, yes,
so many
Louis
things
Martin.
In my mind relate to Prince. But when he mentioned Jermaine
yes.
Stewart was part of Shalimar, right? Shalimar.
I don't think he was a part of Shalimar, but they're all connected somehow. Because remember,
yes.
Jermaine Stewart was great friends with Jody Watley.
Right,
Jody
right.
Watley was, they were both, I believe, dancers on Soul Train. Yeah, she was definitely part of that group,
Shalimar. Okay.
Right.
So when I heard the song, I thought he sang on that song. Okay. Sorry,
well,
audience.
Listen,
I didn't mean to
you
confuse
could
you.
Be, well, let's, we're going to, that's what, we're going to Google that because you could very much be correct. Like I said, mm-hmm. they were all kind of interconnected. Jermaine and Jody were great, great friends. Jody, of course, went on to an amazing solo career. Jody
mm-hmm.
Wildly, we're talking about. I had a chance to see her a couple of times. I follow her and stay connected with all that she's doing out there. Big, big folks. And what I love that he told us a little bit about working with both Jermaine Stewart and Jermaine Jackson.
Right.
You got to remember, if you listened carefully, he mentioned about Arista Records.
They were on Arista, which was, you know, Whitney Houston time and Clive Davis time.
Yeah,
so
they just
all
kind
of that,
hung around each other and gleaned this and gleaned that.
Sure, they were label makers.
Beautiful thing.
And, yeah, and yet they, this is to be, you've got to also think about this, Mary. He had top, like four top 10 hits on Billboard.
Amazing.
Those were the charts that you really didn't see a lot of people of color so much on in the top 10. We would be more so relegated to the R&B charts. They were out there with four top 10 hits in the top 10. And he wrote the album. So I salute Louis Martinet. I still love their music. It's you just enjoy his happy music. You guys should check it out when you get a chance. Exposé is the name of the group. And Louis Martinet lands at our number 7 spot on our 10. 10.
Wow.
Most fascinating guest.
This is a great list.
Right
this
here.
This is a great
is
list.
Is that not? I'm excited about it, too. Now, coming up at number 6, and you know how we've been mentioning who the person is and their slot number. This particular person is not so much from the world of entertainment, but he is connected. He is a hair legend and has been out there for about 3 decades or so, doing hair and cutting hair, styling hair. He's known as a great person to cut hair and color hair. And that's something in the black community, we're not always known or recognized as being great at those things. And Troy Ballard is a true superstar in every sense of the word in the hair and beauty industry. I had a chance to chat with him a while ago. So this is a very, and this may have been before he took on a regular time slot Wednesday mornings at 8:30 here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. So let's take a listen at one of the early interviews that I had a chance to do with Smooth Black. And we'll be back on the other side, Mary. I want to get your feedback on this. So we're super, super hyped. And we'll get a chance to chat.
Absolutely.
You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Kerry Hines. Now, I have a very special guest with us today. You will get to know him well. The Hair Radio Morning Show is very proud to welcome the amazing Mr. Smooth Black to the broadcast. Good morning, Smooth.
Good morning, Kerry. How you doing?
All right. Cousin Smooth, I'm going to have to go ahead and put that on out there. How are you? Out in California, we're grateful to have you this morning on the show.
It's good to be here. It's good to be
yes.
Here.
Now, I have to start at the beginning, and our beginning goes way, way, way back.
Yeah.
I mean, way back. So I have to tell everybody, in full disclosure, you are just, have come to be, you're in your own right, you are a true success story in the hair and beauty industry. But just as important, I'm happy to say, as an extension of my very own family, and we're just so proud of you and all that you have accomplished. So we're going to get into all of that. So, Smooth Black, welcome again to the broadcast. So, now you're out in California. I want you to tell the folks, I know you have a big, big following in hair industry out there on the West Coast, but tell everybody exactly where you are.
Well, I'm in Fontana, California at the moment. Been out here. Yeah, Fontana, Funtucky, as they call it. But
wow. Okay, so now we've got to tell everybody, for those folks, you have a big following, as I mentioned and said at the top of this. But I want you to tell the folks, now I see what you're doing out there with all of the styling that you do, and I want you to talk a little bit about that today. Share with us what's making you a big legend out there in the hair business, cousin. Tell everybody about it.
Well, as most cosmetological entrepreneurs should understand that, my motto is, if it don't make dollars, it doesn't.
Yeah.
In 30 years, I've been able to, you know, teach a lot. Education is a number one factor. When I first started, I used to take advanced haircutting classes, and, you know, I had people that I looked up to in the industry as far as male stylists, like Carl Reed, Mr. Little Willie out of Detroit.
Carl Reed, one of my dear friends, did you know he's a big singer now?
Yes,
Carl's
I do.
Been on
yes,
our show
I do.
Many times. Yes. Oh, awesome.
Awesome.
Yes.
Awesome. Yeah, I really enjoyed watching him through Hair Wars and, you know, the tours and the Ideal Black Trade Show, Spectrum International Trade Show, where, you know, through Bonner Brothers in Atlanta, the Proud Lady in Chicago, just over the years being able to travel and do education and meet other, you know, I call them hair entertainers, because, you know, we love what we do. But in the hair industry, you know, it's really been a blessing, you know, to me and my family. So so that's where I'm at right now, Carrie, continuing my education and be able to share with people the 30 years of experience that I have attained behind my chair. So I like to just, you know, just elaborate, you know, keeping my trendy. You know, some people say, you know, you want to follow a trend. I tell them I'm a trendsetter. So it's all about who you are and creating yourself. So over the years, you know, they dawned me as Smooth Black in the hair industry. But, you know, I'm also known, my biological name is Troy Ballard. And, you know, God has been good to me in this industry. So when they call me Smooth Black, you know, it's just something that, you know, lifts up my spirit. But be able to be recognized by my peers is a wonderful feeling.
Well, I've got to tell the folks, you have really made an impression out there. And you talk about creativity, and we look, you're representing brands, and I want you to get into a little bit about this, because it's not just any old body that's selected or chosen to be a brand ambassador or to work with these big brands. Can you tell us a little bit about the company that you work with?
Well, I'm going to backtrack a little, because I got my first start with Design Essentials, McBride Research Laboratories out of Atlanta, Georgia, and I became an educator for that company for 10 years. And it was a black-owned company, which I love, but it was a multicultural line also. And from there, I went on to teach for V Violet, is the essence of beauty, a young lady by the name of Linda Cox out of Jackson, Tennessee. God rest her soul, she went on to be with the Lord, but her company is still thriving. And at the present time, I'm working with LaRon Hair Care System, based out of Riverside, California. Awesome husband and wife and son team that's been branding there. They're like 11 years now, and, you know, and the company is just going to higher heights, you know, and it's about, they teach unity in the community, in the hair community, you know, iron sharpen iron, each one reach one, each one teach one. But our emphasis is continued education. So I always want to give kudos to Mr. Lorenzo Griffin and Wanda Griffin, his wife, for, you know, putting such a remarkable product together. You know, it's made for professionals, designed by professionals, and sold only to professionals. So at this point, they're exclusive, you know, so they promote, you know, wellness within and trying to create jobs instead of taking jobs from people with the company and the branding of their products.
And we call it Salon Direct. So that is
Salon Direct. Yeah.
Oh, yes. That is awesome. Mm-hmm. Now, how do you spell that? I want folks, in case they want to Google it or find out more, how do you spell the name of that?
LaRon, it stands for Larry and Randy. There were two brothers that passed away. And in memory of them, they created LaRon. And it's LaRan, Professional Hair Care System.
All right. So you heard it right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. And I know that you were affiliated with them, and I think it's just awesome. Now, I've got to say, because being out there on the West Coast with you guys and being here in New York, you know, do you think, and you've been out here to Atlanta and to the East Coast and all of that, have you found a difference in the hair care industry, you know, in terms of the West Coast versus the East Coast, or have you found a lot of similarities? When you go down to Atlanta and go to Bronner Brothers, do you find the same types of concerns or issues or challenges? What's your
well, Well, my biggest concern, you know, from Detroit being the hair capital, from Atlanta, but, you know, I've taught in New York, but every state seems to have their own trend. You know, healthy hair promotion, a lot of people going natural hair, and depends on what I'm finding out is who you are and what you specialize in. Me being that I'm a hair cutter, 80% of my clientele hair is short. But I also, you know, learned how to weave hair, do commercial weaves, and, you know, just doing, but that's for people who have alopecia and want a change in life to cover the hair normalities up. But at each state, I found that, you know, like Detroit, known for more hard styles, using more lacquers, more sprays, more adding more commercial hair. For California, I found that we're more natural and into natural hair. But me, I'm into cutting and styling. Therefore, you know, my clientele, I see my clients on a weekly basis or biweekly basis versus if I'm a professional weaver, I may do that hair installation in June and may not see that client again till like August, you know. So that's why I promote healthy hair first, a great haircut, give them a great color enhancement, and give them a great look that's trendy that every time they step out, they'll promote smooth black, you know. So in my area, you can see my work everywhere you go. And, you know, and you know, I always say stylists, rather Detroit from Mr. Little, Little Willie, Carl Reed, Big Boy. These are all the male stylists that I enjoy. But, you know, from Shalina Allen in Hollywood to, you know, so many great hair stylists out there that I love their work. But in each one, I always challenge stylists as I'm teaching, you know, learn every aspect about hair care first. Learn how to take care of the hair, then the hair take care of you. As we begin to promote ourselves and, you know, the work that I produce out my chair reflects the prices that I charge. So after 30 years of experience, I'm not a novice, and I can demand top dollar for my work, but my work speaks for itself. I may charge a little bit more for my product, but my product is a brand, and, you know, it's like, you know, some people like to drive Mercedes, and some people just like to drive a regular Toyota, you know, and I always try to tell them I'm a Rolls Royce of a stylist, so I'm going to give you my best. But my price always reflects my work. Therefore, you know, it's not a job to me. This is a career, and, you know, learning how to get everything out of it is what I'm striving to do now. And to share with my peers, you know, how to retain a clientele. You know, I just don't want to see that person one time in my chair. I want them for a lifetime.
Absolutely. You know, so. Well, your styles have made that happen. I've seen some of your styles, and I've gone to, and I tell everybody, I've gone to some of the Facebook, and I'm blown away at the styles that you have cut, and I see a lot with those sharp cuts, and I'm like, wow. So is it true, I mean, the word on the street is that there's some shears coming, so I want to find out right here on the show, are you coming out with some kind of a shear line? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I'm looking, you know, I'm trying to get the right steel gauge, like 440 gauge, but the dynamics of it and the design and the way it's going to help relieve, you know, over the years, I don't want to get carpal tunnel. So the way that the shears are angled and, you know, how you position yourself when you're cutting, these are things that I'm employing as I do my hair cutting classes. So when I do my hair cutting class, you know, I'm going to have a top-of-the-line shear that you can, you know, purchase. And, you know, like I tell them, I said, when I teach, I said, you can mimic me and learn from me, but eventually you're going to have to step out and, you know, start creating for yourself. You know, when I first started, I'd take a picture and I'd try to emulate it. And then I'd take away, and then all of a sudden the creativity will come. Therefore, no one brings me a magazine that says, can you do my hair like this? I have the leeway now that they just sit in my chair and allow me to have free reign to create a look for them.
And it works out just fine, I see.
Oh, yes. Yeah, if you give me a picture and you say to make it like this, I try to tell them, look, if you want that exact style, you may want to, because if you've seen it in Hype Hair, try it yourself here at Mazza, or Black Hair Sophisticates magazine, it usually has a style and the stylist name there. So if you want that particular style, you might want to go see that person. So I can tell you, I tell my clients, I'll give you that version of it. But in the essence, it's going to be my creativity, my knowledge, and my experience that you're going to enjoy. You know,
it doesn't get any better than that.
Oh, my God.
There you go. Well, listen, folks, if you have just joined us, you're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines, and with me, I have to say, there's a very, very special guest today, and I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to tell you why. I've got to say, you know, and Smooth Black, for all of our listeners out there and the fans, and for those of you who absolutely want to follow Smooth Black, if you have not done so already, because you're on Facebook, I believe, as Smooth Black. So I
yes,
think,
sir.
Am I correct? So that's a great place you could follow and see all of this amazing work. Of course, through the Hair Radio Morning Show, we're going to have some things out there on our app as well to reflect your work and how folks can contact you through the Hair Radio Morning Show. But I've got to say, I do have to give you one story, okay? So I was a teenager. Now, granted, at the very end of that teenager scale, but I was a teenager, and I remember coming out to California and hanging out with Smooth Black back in the day. That's how long ago this that we go back.
This is Queen Tree, and I'm shouting out the Hair Radio Show with Carrie Hines.
Crystal Jones Vaughn of Assuage Hair and Body, and I love the Hair Radio Show.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Carrie Hines.
It's time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Carrie Hines.
All right, we're back live. You are listening to a very special edition of the Hair Radio Morning Show. Yes, I'm Carrie Hines, and joining me on the line, I have to say, is Mary Reed Johnson. You guys know her from Hair Head Heart. She's also been my special guest contributor every time we have one of these amazing shows to do. Mary Reed Johnson is there, so we are so excited, and I must say thank you. Good morning, Mary,
thank you.
It's great to have you.
You know, did you tell Troy that I love him? I do.
Mary's talking about Ballard, number six, actually. He's number six on our countdown list. So, yes, you love Troy Ballard. Ah, Smooth Black, you guys know him. But why, Mary? Tell everybody why.
Well, he's very serious about his craft. He doesn't sit on his laurels. He keeps it moving. He keeps learning. He keeps growing. He keeps sharing. That's what we're supposed to do. And he is very humble at the same time.
Yes, he is. He's a very humble guy. He's extraordinary. Very nice fellow. And his whole family's like that. Like I said, towards the end of the piece, they took me in, and I was a little kid and 3,000 miles away from home. And they were very kind to me. I had no idea that we both would take different paths to superstardom in the hair and beauty industry. We have done just that. So I'm super hyped and grateful to have him and to be still working with him as we continue with some of these amazing projects. So today...
Both inspirations.
Well, likewise, Mary Reed Johnson. And actually, that brings us exactly to where I wanted to be, the perfect transition. Mary, we're going to turn over to you. We want to take a moment to tell everybody, you've been doing some amazing work over the years. You have, like I said, you're not a stranger to broadcasting. What are you working on these days, Mary Reed Johnson? And tell us a little bit about Hair Head Heart.
Sure. Well, these days I'm sliding more in to consulting instead of being only behind the chair. I mean that is in itself is ongoing consulting, but I think it can help more people if I broaden my scope, and I'm going to be a little bit more like Troy. Yes, sharing messages mostly about safety for the service providers. We do a lot of great things and we make a lot of great looks, but we aren't always so great about taking care of ourselves. And so that is my focus, help my brothers and sisters in the industry.
Absolutely. And I love that you've been on the Hair Radio Morning Show over the years. And, you know, you are actually located where? Tell everybody, you know, essentially where you're out of.
Absolutely. New change in the world, too. I am not in Minnesota anymore. I am in Michigan. So Southwest Michigan,
wow.
If you've ever heard of Portage or Kalamazoo, that's where I'm doing my thing these days.
Well, yes, we got to know Mary, and this is a great part, you know, and getting to know folks. You started out in Minneapolis, Minnesota, the home of Prince. And how in the world did you end up in Kalamazoo?
Well, long, long, long story. I was born in Chicago, raised in Michigan, Minneapolis in the 90s, of course, because Prince was there, and no matter what other research I had. But I moved back here to be near family with this COVID stuff. And so here I am, yes.
Well, listen, we don't mind wherever you are because we can always find you here at the Hair Radio Morning Show. Listen, I just want to say thank you again to the amazing Mary Reed Johnson, who always helps us out here on this broadcast. Today we went from number 8, if you guys recall. We had the amazing Lisa Bloom coming at number 8 on today's broadcast, episode number 2. On our 10 most fascinating guests of the Hair Radio Morning Show. Number 7, Louis Martinet, again, the founder of Exposé Music Group. And coming in at number 6, you guys just heard from Troy Ballard, a.k.a. Smooth Black, from out in Southern California. Mary Reed Johnson, I'm Carrie Hines, and I just want to say thank you again. Extraordinary job. Great job, Mary.
My pleasure. It's wonderful being here. Can't wait for the next
you
one.
You get it. Yes, we'll see you guys back here for episode number 3 soon. Thanks again, Mary. Make it a great, great, great day. Stay with us.